Welcome to Football Never Sleeps, aspiring to be viral and caffeinated, and a weekly YouTube show all about Notre Dame football and a fan base that's finally maybe getting their body clocks adapted to that late Saturday night win over Stanford. I'm Eric Hansen in South Bend and swearing off giant turkey legs for a while. He's Tyler James in LaPorte, Indiana, and curbing his enthusiasm for the next Lake Effect snowstorm. Together, we are the weather savvy, word salad avoiding content creators at blueandgold.com. Two more college football playoff reveal shows to go, and we're going to tell you Notre Dame's playoff path, dispel some mythology, and throw around some other ideas, maybe even involving Miami. We'll also tell you about some injured players that could be back for Notre Dame's playoff run. We got the coaching carousel spinning, recruiting day coming up on Wednesday, and your questions, so start filling up the portal. This is Football Never Sleeps. I have renamed signing day recruiting day. I just did that.
That's because you love Recruitapalooza so much.
That's right. It is the ultimate Recruitapalooza.
Thank you to everyone for tuning in live on their Monday night. Shout out to Jeff, Brian, Outbound, John, Paul. Appreciate you guys all chiming in.
George and Ringo too.
George and Ringo too. As the show gets started here, we do not have the Beatles with us, but you'll just have to settle for us too, and all the questions that you guys submit to us. Time is of the essence, so I want to get this reminder at the start of the show. If you're watching this live or shortly after on Monday, you still have time to take advantage of the Cyber Monday deal to subscribe to blueandgold.com. New subscribers can purchase the first year of an annual subscription for half the regular price. So instead of paying $119.99 for a year-long subscription to blueandgold.com, you can pay just $59.99. There's a link to subscribe in the video description below. You can subscribe over on blueandgold.com, just hitting the join button. You don't need a promo code or anything. While it is still Cyber Monday, that promo will be available for new subscribers that sign up for an annual subscription. So make sure you subscribe before midnight if you want to take advantage of that deal. And whether you are watching us on live or on replay, we always want to make sure that you're subscribed to us here on the channel as well. Hit the like button on this video, even if you don't like my I decided I'm wearing Christmas sweaters for Football Never Sleeps this month. So this is my Star Wars themed Christmas sweater right now. Also, wanted to get some comments on the show. Comment which team you'd like Notre Dame to play in the first round of the college football playoff. I'm interested to see what people think they want to play against in the college football playoff. So as we get started, there's no Monday press conference because Notre Dame doesn't have a game this weekend. So we don't have Marcus Freeman comments to riff off of, but we're going to start our conversation with the college football playoff with the penultimate rankings for the 2025 season coming Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Only two of the top 15 teams lost this past weekend, number 3 Texas A&M and number 15 Michigan. There are a number of questions that I have going into tomorrow night. I wanted to go through them with you a little bit, Eric. I know you just released your behind the ballot story earlier this evening, which touches on all kinds of playoff topics. The things that I'm most curious about is how far will Texas A&M fall? Will Ole Miss be affected by Lane Kiffin's departure? And will there be any other movement around Notre Dame? So let's take those one at a time. What do you think about how far Texas A&M will fall?
Well, the AP and the coaches both have them 7. I have them 6 on my ballot. I think that's 6 or 7, I think, seems to be reasonable in terms of where they fall. I don't think they would fall. Let's say Oklahoma doesn't budge, which is the 8 team. I just don't think they fall below Oklahoma. Those other teams are all kind of in one big pot, but that would be my guess.
All right. Yeah, I thought – the most interesting thing from your ballot, from my perspective, is that you had Ole Miss ahead of Texas A&M all the way up at number 4. You obviously don't seem to be impacting Ole Miss, but not having Lane Kiffin. What are your thoughts on if the committee will agree with that?
Or should I think agree it, with that? I don't think that they should. And the reason being, I don't think it's fair to the kids. It's not fair that their coach left them. And I know that LSU's athletic director, who is Jaden Osbury's dad, really wanted Lane Kiffin to coach Ole Miss in the playoff. But that's not his decision. But he was certainly on board with it. I just think it penalizes the kids. And you really don't know how something like that would affect a team. We saw it a little bit with the bowl game that Notre Dame played in against Oklahoma State, the Fiesta Bowl, back in the 2021 season. Marcus Freeman did a really good job as head coach in that day, in that game. The problem was replacing Marcus Freeman in that game, and the defense was a mess. And so I don't think it should affect them. I would be against the committee doing that. I'm not saying that they won't. I just think it's that is not what I would do if I were on the committee.
I think I totally understand the fairness aspect of it. I'm not sure that I believe Ole Miss is as good of a team without so many. And it's not just Lane Kiffin, right? So many of its coaches, and what will happen with all of that. I
agree.
I think he matters a lot. I guess where I would draw the line, to me, like, I think they belong in the playoff. I think their seeding can take a hit because of not having Lane Kiffin. I guess that would be – maybe that doesn't seem fair. Like, maybe that seems like unfair reasoning to draw a line between those two different things. But as long as it doesn't, like, push them out of the playoff, I don't necessarily and it, like, maybe – it pushes them from being a host to not being a host. I don't think they would fall that far.
I don't think so either. They'd have to fall to 9.
So I guess it all it really does is probably impact their path, unless they were to get a top 4 spot and get an automatic bye. So that would be the difference there. So I'd be curious to see what happens to them. I think that'll be maybe finally a talking point that is greater than the Notre Dame Miami talking point that, or maybe at least
it already is
talked more about. So I'm curious to see what that discussion looks like tomorrow night, and obviously what they do to rank them in terms of defining that discussion.
Well, and also I should point out two things about the AP poll. One is I made my vote before Lane Kiffin was gone. And two, it's not our mission to seed teams for the playoff. It's our mission to rank them based on what they've done. So that wouldn't come into play for us.
Yeah. Thank you for the reminder about when you submitted your ballot. I didn't even consider that when I was looking at it. So that's good. If I didn't think about it, I'm sure I'm not the only one who didn't think about it. So I appreciate
the AP left them where they, I mean, they stayed in the same spot when they could have moved up. The coaches did give them a bump by a spot.
All right. Now, lastly, do you think there will be any movement around Notre Dame?
I don't think Alabama did enough against Auburn, kind of lucking out by Auburn not sending that into overtime. They were driving in Alabama territory when they turned it over with down 27-20. And I think Notre Dame's win is better than what the final score looked like. The one thing the committee could get squirrely on is flipping Notre Dame and Oklahoma, which would I don't think will happen, but they may not be impressed with the LSU victory, a 4-point victory over a team with 5 losses. But I don't think that was enough. I think they think, you know what, LSU's the 10th place SEC team. They'd be a lot better in a lot of other conferences. And I think a 4-point win over, you know, an SEC team with a winning overall record is probably good enough to stay where you are.
All right. Certainly the debate will rage on beyond the Tuesday rankings release.
I've had Oklahoma behind Notre Dame for a while, so I don't. So I didn't flip them this week, but I've had Notre Dame above Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I can run through – I wrote down your top 16, and 16 was of note because who that is for Notre Dame's purposes. But if folks are interested, you can obviously read Eric's behind the ballot every weekend during the AP voting season. His poll was number one, Ohio State, number two, Indiana, number three, Georgia, four, Ole Miss, five, Oregon, six, Texas A&M, seven, Notre Dame, eight, Texas Tech. I did see some Texas Tech folks in your Twitter mentions today. Number nine, Oklahoma, number 10, Alabama, number 11, Vanderbilt, number 12, Texas, number 13, BYU, number 14, Miami, number 15, Utah, and number 16, USC.
So what I'd say to the Texas Tech mentions, I'd probably tweet at me too. I mean, if I thought it was going to do any good. Texas Tech, well, seriously, I mean, you never hear from fan bases like Alabama and Georgia.
Yeah, no one's saying thank you.
Well, no, but I mean, you don't hear from fan bases that are used to being ranked or underranked or overranked. Oh, gotcha. They've kind of given up that. You'll hear from the Texas Tech. You'll hear from Iowa State when they think they should be ranked, teams like that. But Texas Tech has a lot to be proud of. Metrically, they look like a team that should be ranked high. What is difficult for me, and I wrote this about the behind the ballot column, is the Big 12 as a whole. There's no question they're the best team in the Big 12. But how good is the Big 12? The ACC has played 13 games against top 25 teams outside of their conference. And the Big 12 has played three and lost every one of them. And so we don't really know the relative strength of that conference. We don't have a lot to compare it to because there's such a small sample size. And what sample size we do have, they lost every game. They lost to Missouri, Georgia Tech, and Oregon. And I think that's sad that they don't schedule more outside. I think they only have themselves to blame if people are confused. I think Texas Tech is probably legit. I don't think BYU is a playoff team. But we'll see. Texas Tech's only loss is when they didn't have their starting quarterback. And they're going to be Texas Tech guys on my AP All-America team. But, you know, I may be wrong about Texas Tech. I may be right about them. I just don't have enough data to stomp my feet and put a pacifier in my mouth and hold my blankie and say, no, Texas Tech is really that good. Because I don't know.
I'm sure these playoff debates will continue beyond Tuesday. I wanted to, before we get into some of the questions folks are submitting, talk a little bit about some things that we've either heard or seen in recent days, whether they're connected to Notre Dame's ranking or someone else, that are relevant, or the least relevant, I mean, and don't actually matter. I'm just surprised by the number of things that get brought up or suggested when folks are talking about the college ball playoff. I don't know if you have anything in mind, Eric. I have one thing that I know you're interested in. You even wrote about, but I'm not sure if we're on the same page there.
Go ahead and ask me whatever you want.
The first one was the Nicole Auerbach take, the ACC, championship game. And her tweet was, this might be an unpopular take, but if I'm the ACC and Cal upsets SMU, which she tweeted that obviously before that game went final, I believe, I override the tiebreakers and put Miami in the ACC championship game against Virginia. What are your thoughts on that?
First of all, I think Nicole Auerbach is awesome. I think she's a really good journalist. We've had her on our podcast before. Super impressive. And everybody has a bad day at the office, and this was Nicole's bad day at the office, in my opinion. That's not only a stupid take, it's unethical. Seriously, you're going to change the rule. If you want to change the rule, change them after the season and figure out a better tie-breaking procedure. To do it while a game is in progress, or here's what the rules are until, oh my gosh, we don't like who's going to be in it, so let's change the rules. All of a sudden, even though this team earned to be in, I think that's just really, really bad. That's a bad look, and it makes you look really bad as a journalist, I think.
Yeah, it's like arguing for a conference championship committee. Like the ACC needs to have a committee to decide who's in the championship game for his conference rather than the outlined rules that everyone agreed upon going into the season. It seems kind of silly to change your rules just because of the team who you believe has the best chance to make the playoff didn't make your conference championship.
And the ACC scheduled its conference, you know, who was playing who in the conference.
Right.
And this is what they get. And then Virginia loses a game to NC State. Oh, guess what? That's not even a conference game. Virginia has no top 25 wins.
Yeah. I think we're seeing more and more how these big conferences are impacting the bigger picture in terms of conference championship games, who these teams are actually playing within their own conference. Like, you can have a pretty light conference opponent draws. I mean, even some of the best teams in the SEC, like Ole Miss and Texas A&M, they have pretty favorable conference draws this season that allowed them to get through their conference season with one loss.
Right.
And so I think in my perfect college football world, there's someone who is like in charge of putting all these conference schedules together and making sure that there's some sort of evenness to them. And maybe you got four power conferences. Everyone in those conferences should play one team from each of the other power conferences each season. I mean, these are the things that maybe they happen in this whatever future of college football looks like, to try to make it have more comparison points and to give more data to the committee that is being asked a not easy task to do. Everyone's going to have their opinions on who the best teams are when you don't have a lot of overlapping opponents and things of that matter.
Yeah, I mean, and you do have control over who you play outside your conference. And sometimes you get tricked by teams, but I mean, Texas Tech really had a very, very light non-conference schedule. Again, they've dominated their conference, but they could have been a little bit more ambitious. But think about it, Tyler. 13 teams, top 25 teams, the ACC played. Now they get five of those against Notre Dame, but 13. Big Ten and SEC played seven each. The Big 12 played three. Guess how many the American Athletic Conference played? Just take
five?
A guess. Nine. Now, they lost all nine of them, but they were competitive in a lot of those. In Tulane, they got whooped by Ole Miss. But you know what? They beat the Duke team that's playing for the ACC championship, and they beat Northwestern 23-3. I mean, I give those teams credit. Navy goes out and plays Notre Dame. You know, South Florida had a very ambitious schedule. They played Boise. They played Miami. They played Florida. They beat Florida. They beat a team that Texas lost to. So I give them some credit. So out-of-conference scheduling, I think, should matter. The other thing I'll say about out-of-conference scheduling, you know, Steve Sarkisian, and he needs to – I mean, he's the head coach. He can say it's a travesty or whatever. He's saying going out and playing Ohio State is what's keeping them out of the playoff. For me, it's not. The right. 7-point loss to Ohio State actually helps them in my eye. I have Texas ranked, I believe, ahead of Miami. It's the loss to Florida. You know, you lose to a team that's won three or four games. You don't get to not count those games. And Texas has another loss to Georgia they were simply not competitive in that game. And they have some really good wins. They're a tough evaluation, but had Texas not played Ohio State, I wouldn't have them any higher. In fact, I might have them lower. So I think it pays to go out and play good teams. I think it should pay to go out and play good teams.
Yeah, the Texas Tech scheduling part of it is like, I wonder if they thought they were going to be this good when the schedule was put together, because Texas Tech hasn't been like knocking on the door of the playoff in previous years, and is in a situation where maybe
I don't know how far in advance, but I mean, they played Arkansas Pine Bluff,
right?
Kent State,
that was never going to be a good game.
Right, Now, where I give them credit maybe is Oregon State. Maybe they scheduled that when Oregon State and the Pac-12 were still a thing. I don't know, because Oregon State now is unrecognizable. But a few years ago, Oregon State was pretty good.
Right. There are a couple other things I wanted to mention. One that is an anti-Notre Dame argument, or more of a pro-Miami argument, and one that's more of a pro-Notre Dame argument. The thing that I see talked about from Miami fans mostly is that Miami dominated Notre Dame. Despite the fact that they needed a game-winning field goal with a minute and four remaining. Like, just because you came out of the game and played well early doesn't mean it was a dominant performance. Like, you won by 3 points and needed a game-winning field goal. Like, those things are not equal. That's not the reality. You don't get to pretend that the second half didn't happen because maybe you weren't being as aggressive. Like, that you have to live with your choice to not be aggressive in the second half if you feel like that's the only reason that Notre Dame got back in that game. The other thing is folks saying that Notre Dame didn't really lose to Texas A&M because of the missed holding penalty on the game-winning touchdown. Like, there are referee and official mistakes throughout every game. We can't rewrite the outcome of the game because a call was missed. Notre Dame deservedly gets credit for barely losing that game, but we can't pretend like it's not a loss because of that missed holding penalty. So those are just some of the things that I see people talking about when they're really trying to make their points in support of those teams, which I think is sort of losing the plot a little bit. All right, let's get into some of these questions that we had. I think we talked about this already. Mac AD 1414 says, any chance Notre Dame jumps Oklahoma?
I mean, that's really up to the committee how they see it. When you look at Oklahoma's rankings and different categories nationally, it's stunning how bad they are on offense almost across the board. If I could put it on the screen, I would, and maybe I'll put it in the comment section. I had it in my behind the ballot column today, and I have it on our message board. Now, Oklahoma's defense is real. There's nothing fake about that, but their offense, you wouldn't think that is a team that's better than Miami, but Oklahoma has some really good wins. And they only have one really weird, icky loss, and that's to Texas 23-6. I mean, Texas dominated them in a time that Texas wasn't playing very well against anybody else.
All right. The Ozzie family and Jeff Stevens had a similar question. This one says, does Eric Hansen see any assistant coaches leaving for new hired head coaches in Power Five? Jeff followed up, is there any chance Notre Dame could lose an assistant coach between now and the first playoff game? So I'm not 100% sure if Ozzie meant Notre Dame coaches specifically here, but Jeff did. And I'm not sure if you would have any idea of non-Notre Dame coaches, but wanted to throw that at you, Eric.
Yeah. So let's answer it as if both of them meant Notre Dame coaches. I mean, we haven't gotten even any smoke on that right. Now, again, the carousel keeps spinning, and that's when a lot of these guys, like the Tommy Reese thing, didn't happen until it was February, right, Tyler?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the NFL carousel will affect college coaches as well. So, but the question is, before the first playoff game, I don't sense that happening. But again, every time there's a movement, then there's another team that has vacancies to fill, but I don't see a head coaching opening that pairs well with a Notre Dame assistant. I don't think Chris Ash is looking to go anywhere. Mike Denbrock's not looking. And then you would get down to position coaches. And I think Mike Mickens, probably knowing how smart he is, would like to be a defensive coordinator first and get really, you know, show how good he is at that, and then graduate to being a head coach. And I think he would be good at both of those things.
Yeah. I don't know
did
that
I
see any
enough.
Yeah, no, I think you did. Okay. I don't know that I see any like openings. I mean, obviously more openings can continue to happen. I think, like you mentioned, the NFL cycle will change things a bit. I mean, yeah, I don't know who UConn is interested in as its head coach. I'm not sure that there's anyone on Notre Dame's coaching staff that would make sense as a head coach there. But I guess there could be guys who are on Notre Dame staff who could be hired as coordinators somewhere else.
Right.
But that cycle will happen later, I think. Like, you don't need to have your coordinator in place in time for signing day. Like, that's why the head coaching cycle is the way it is right now. They're trying to get guys to sign, or maybe even don't sign somewhere, to consider their school moving forward. So I don't think that guys that could become coordinators somewhere else would be that search wouldn't necessarily be impacted right. by the college football playoff cycle.
Right. For example, and I'm not trying to start anything. This is just a weird hypothetical, but let's say Pat Fitzgerald is the new Michigan State coach. He may say, wow, Max Bolla is an alum. I wonder if he'd like to be my defensive coordinator. This isn't based on reporting. I'm just trying to throw an example
right.
out there.
Yeah.
That could be.
No, that makes sense. All right. Let's see. T. Dawson says, if Duke wins the ACC tournament versus Virginia, is the college football playoff committee obligated to put Duke in the 12-team playoff? Is there a scenario where no ACC team is in the playoff?
Yes, there is a scenario where no ACC team is in the playoff. And if Duke wins, that probably is going to happen. Right now, going into this reveal Tuesday night, Tulane was ranked. If Tulane beats North Texas in the AAC championship, you would figure they're in. So they're one of the teams that are in. Even if North Texas beat Tulane, North Texas only has one loss, and that's to South Florida. And they would likely be ranked ahead of a five-loss Duke team. And it's ironic because Tulane beat Duke. So I would figure that there's a head-to-head plus everything else. The weird one is James Madison. And James Madison is ranked not only in the top 25, I think they're in the top 20 in the AP poll. And they are playing for their conference championship and are heavy favorites to win that. And if they win that, that's where it gets dicey. Because the committee, even if it doesn't rank James Madison, they continue to rank teams beyond the top 25 until James Madison or Duke comes up. And so that would be an interesting comparison. James Madison's loss is to Louisville, which is an ACC team, but they were competitive in that game and they've blown the doors off of just about everybody else they've played. And then you have a five-loss Duke team. So I do think it's a very strong possibility the ACC gets completely left out.
And James Madison is losing his head coach, Bob Chesney, to UCLA. That would be interesting if somehow.
Well, maybe they could have Kenny Chesney coach their team.
Let's see. Jeff Stevens said, gosh, I hope Carter Carls wasn't the one that left the door open to the post-game press conference. Coach Elko was unhappy. I don't know if you saw that clip, Eric.
I did. And well, I didn't see the clip, but I saw Carter tweet about it. So I figure if Carter was the one he was pissed at, he wouldn't have tweeted the thing out like it's somebody else.
I'm pretty sure Stuart Mandel of The Athletic raised his hand online, virtually raised his hand, saying that he was the one who did it, or he was the one that got in, and it wasn't intentional. He didn't know the press conference was started yet. And I think
and Notre Dame, they won't let you in if it started.
A lot of the road press conference – well, but the road press conference rooms are in very temporary areas, I'll say. So they're easier to get in and out of – depending on the place. So I don't remember what the setup is at Texas. So maybe it was easy to get in and out of there while there were Texas fans hooting and hollering outside. Brian Habermill says, favorite non-quarterback touchdown pass you've ever covered? Had to ask in honor of Josh Burnham's latest entry. Yeah, I think this is the first we've really even mentioned the Stanford game at all, which obviously Notre Dame won handily.
Well, Josh Burnham's, That would be up there. I would have to think about it and I would have to give some thought to it. It's not something I have off the top of my head. Unfortunately, that's not one of my skill sets, but that's a great question. And I will give some thought to it and maybe answer on next week's show or in my chat or something. But Josh Burnham, ironically, what was kind of fun about that combination, Josh Burnham was a pretty prolific quarterback at Traverse City, up in Traverse City, played on a team. Now, he played defense as well, but he was the quarterback for a team that played for a state championship. And then Luke Talich was a Wyoming state champ in the 100, 200, and long jump as a senior. So he can move it. He had a best of 10.72 seconds in the 100-meter dash when he was the state champ in Wyoming.
Yeah, I can't think of any non-quarterback touchdowns for some reason. Like, nothing is coming to mind to even just, like, mention it. I don't know why I've seen
halfback passes, and I've seen wide receiver passes. Like, Cole Kmet threw some passes, but they were never completed. But, the guy that did it kind of regularly, now I'm blanking on his name, the Arkansas running back that was up for the Heisman a few years ago, that was the first really good Wildcat formation.
Darren McFadden?
Darren McFadden. I mean, Darren McFadden was nails at those, throwing out of the Wildcat.
Yeah, it's a good
but
question.
I'd have to think about it, Brian. It was a great question. I need to get the hardware moving up here.
Yeah, if anyone has any suggestions.
And put them in the comments.
Yeah,
too.
Non-touchdown passes, that would be good. Yeah, maybe we can circle back and try to look up and figure out some to give an actual answer to Brian's question. Outbound says, was Jeremiah Love's injury intentional? It looked that way to me, and the way they were tackling him before, it looked like they were out to hurt him.
There was somebody that tweeted about it that wasn't just a crazy person that thought that there was a Stanford defender that just kind of put his knee onto his rib and seemed to do it intentionally. But it's hard to read somebody's intention. I mean, he might have lost his balance. You usually can tell when something's intentional, like the Jerry Tillery thing at USC the one year. But I don't know. I don't see why Stanford would do that, but I can't answer that one. That's beyond my pay grade.
Yeah, I have a take that's probably not popular, is that, like, defensive players are out to hurt offensive players. Like obviously not with, like, malicious intent or, like, illegally, but they're trying to make Jeremiah Love feel pain, right? Like, regardless of what we're talking about with this knee situation, like, that is like, that's what you want Notre Dame's defenders to do, that you want them to hit them hard and make them remember that hit that they just delivered. So maybe they run more tentatively. Like, that's what defensive players do. This is football we're still talking about. It did look interesting to me in terms of, like, okay, did he do that intentionally? Now, was he trying to injure his ribs? Like, I think he was probably trying to make Jeremiah Love feel him, but I don't know that he was, like, trying to injure his ribs necessarily like that. Like to me, that's pretty low on the scale of things that you could do to try to intentionally hurt someone on a football field. And it's just bad luck that it happened the way it did for Jeremiah Love, but also maybe good luck that it wasn't worse for Notre Dame too. Mike DeVoy says, if Billy Shrouth and Charles Jagusa are ready to go in the playoffs, who starts in which positions on the offensive line?
Okay, well, I know you wanted to get into this later, but we can go down this specific path here. So for me, Billy Shrouth goes back to being the left guard. And then what do you do with Jagusa? You've had Gerby Lambert and Emil Wagner working together all year. So do you plug Jagusa in at right guard or left tackle? For me, if I want my best five on the field, I put Jagusa at left tackle, and I put, and that means he's ready to practice as soon as the playoff practice starts. That doesn't mean 2 days before the game. If he's ready to go now, I would put Jagusa at left tackle, and I put Anthony Knapp at center.
All right. Oh, so even more shuffling. Okay. I like that. And I think that would be something that you would want to be in the works, like, right now, in terms of, or as soon as possible, because of all the moving pieces there. I think my move would just be put Shrouth at left guard and Charles Jagusa at right guard. I think they're both obviously Shrouth can play left guard. He should and will play there. I would be shocked if he plays anywhere else, because that's his position and there's no reason that he shouldn't return to it. Jagasa is the one that you don't necessarily know where Notre Dame wants to put him. And obviously his physical readiness is maybe even the bigger question to that. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the other injury guys. You are right. I didn't have any other non-injury questions besides the super chat, and I hadn't read the super chat yet, so I didn't want to put it on screen blindly. So we'll move to that super chat from 74 Ohio. 1 to 10 scale, one being not worried
for the $5.
Yes, and thank you, 74 Ohio, for the super chat. On a 1 to 10 scale, 1 being not worried at all and 10 being very worried, how worried are you that Notre Dame gets left out of the playoff?
I think on a probability scale, at probably a 1.5, I have a hard time believing BYU could beat Texas Tech. I think Alabama under the right conditions could beat Georgia because they already did it and they did it in Athens. But when I look at how those two teams match up, you know, Alabama is such a weak running team. Georgia is really good against the run. The one thing that Georgia doesn't do well that they, if they make Alabama one-dimensional, they don't rush the passer well. They're in like the one teens, you know, between 110 and 120 in sacks and tackles for loss. So they don't get after the passer very much, but I could see Alabama maybe winning their game, but I do not see BYU winning theirs.
Yeah, and those are the worst possible outcomes, right? BYU beating Texas Tech and Alabama right. beating Georgia for Notre Dame. I would put my level of worry at maybe a 3. I just don't think that it's going to come to that Notre Dame gets left out of the playoff. I'm not sure that either of those things happen in terms of BYU beating Texas Tech or Alabama beating Georgia. I'm curious as it relates to this, Eric, is there anything that can happen on Tuesday in these rankings that changes who Notre Dame should be rooting for this weekend?
I don't think so, because I think the whole Miami being in the same pod thing has been misinterpreted and overstated. But I don't think Miami's going to move in the committees. I think they're still going to be kind of a buffer. Now, Miami still could get in if, let's say, Alabama and BYU both lost. Miami possibly could get up to number 10 at that mm-hmm. point. It's just how far would those teams fall if they lose their conference championship games, especially if they're competitive. People say, well, I don't think they'll fall at all. That's not true necessarily. The Athletic did a really good behind the scenes look at last year's playoff, and SMU was out at halftime. They were so far behind Clemson that the committee was going to leave them out. Then they made that a competitive game and they got the last spot. So it wasn't like you can just lose your conference championship and get blown out. But in a competitive game, I don't know if those teams would fall or how far they would fall. But I hope that I'm answering your question and the super chat question. You didn't give me any money, Tyler, so I don't care if I answer yours. No, and we appreciate the questions that aren't super chats, but we do appreciate the super chat.
Yes, thank you, 74 Ohio, once again. I think we talked about this earlier, but Ozzie Family submitted it a couple times, so maybe we didn't. Why would Ole Miss losing the offensive coordinator staff not hurt them in the playoff selection?
Well, the committee has got pressed on this last week. Hunter Yurashek, if I'm pronouncing his name right, and if I'm not, come get me. No, but I like to pronounce people's names right. But he said, you know, they haven't looked that far because Kiffin hadn't left. Now they're going to have to look at it on Tuesday. It's going to have to be something they consider. And so we'll get their answer. When Brian Kelly left and Marcus Freeman became the head coach, the committee did say that that would not factor into whether Notre Dame got into the playoff or not. because they felt there was enough continuity with Marcus Freeman taking over the program. Again, each situation is a little bit different, and it could affect it. It's going to be very interesting, but I don't think enough, like Tyler said, to affect whether I think they'll have a home game. I think they'll be in the playoff and have a home game.
All right. Another super chat from Michaels 2839. Does Brian Kelly get a job this coming year where possible?
Yes. Wendy's. No, just kidding. Just kidding, BK. We know that you'd only go to Burger King if you wanted a fast food job. I think that Brian Kelly will sit out this year and give it some thought and look for the next coaching carousel and maybe get the best pick of the jobs. Maybe do TV for a year and see if that's coaching is really what he wants to do. I think his ego would press him into being a head coach again so that he can prove that he's the good coach that he thinks he is. And I do think he's a good coach. I think he'd be great on TV. He's getting paid. He doesn't need to have another job. And then he really needs to consider. He is 64 years old, and he's a young 64, but do you really want to go to a place where you have to rebuild? Do you really want to go to a place where you have to really hustle with recruiting? In this day and age, even at the Blue Bloods, you got to hustle with recruiting. I think those are the questions he has to ask himself. And so my bet would be on a TV job this coming year. And I think he'd be really good at it.
Yeah, there's not necessarily openings to me that make a lot of sense. Like, I mean, maybe UConn. Like, is Brian Kelly really willing to coach at UConn or want to coach at UConn? Just because obviously his Northeast ties, you think that would be somewhere that he could be a natural fit and not have to.
And change. Not have to change his accent.
Yeah, you beat me to the punchline. Not have to change his accent. He could say Virginia all he wants, because he always just, that was one of the few words where his Boston accent would come back when he was at Notre Dame. But I think sitting out this cycle, I'm not sure that he will coach again. I don't have any insight to that, but. I'm curious what his drive to coach somewhere again will be, because I don't see, there's not going to be a lot of like big time jobs probably that want to hire Brian Kelly after the way things happened at LSU. But sometimes too, a season off like that washes away your last job a little bit more. And then people like, I think Brian Kelly can be a likable guy sitting at a desk talking about college football, and maybe that brings that out of him, and people maybe start to turn around on Brian Kelly a little bit with that this coming year, if that's what he chooses to do.
About a year maybe or two before Brian took the LSU job, I mean, we used to talk every June in his office. We'd have a one-on-one, and we talk some on the record and some off the record, and I know that this was on the record. And he thought that he didn't see himself coaching like past age 62 or 63. He thought he'd finish out at Notre Dame, and then he would be on the beach somewhere, but he wanted to then be connected to college football in some way, like as a athletic director, as a commissioner, as a consultant or something. He wanted to be connected to the game. And so at some point his desires changed, but if he has an offset in his contract, which I think he does, if he gets a job somewhere else, it comes off of his, he doesn't get to keep all that buyout and have another salary. The salary eats into that buyout. It offsets the buyout. So he's working basically for nothing if he takes a, you know, college coaching job.
Chris says your intro song is kind of catchy, so I wanted to give you an opportunity to plug where our intro song comes from.
Our intro song, thank you. Our intro song comes from a guy that I met named Steve Lundgren. He goes by Piano Man Steve. He has live streams a couple times a week. You can go watch him. Just type in Piano Man Steve, and you can request songs live. He came to a Notre Dame game here, not this season, but last season. had to sweat out a lightning delay. And then he was waiting for me to get done with my press conferences so I could drop them off at their Airbnb. And he almost choked to death. His friend had to save his life with the Heimlich maneuver. But he's a great musician, a really fun guy. And he came up with that jingle for us. And we really appreciate him. He's one of my favorite people.
All right. We've talked a lot about other teams. I'm not sure if we hit enough on Notre Dame specifically. So, and maybe you did, but what do you think are the strongest selling points for Notre Dame that matter most in this college football playoff conversation?
Well, they don't have any bad losses. Last year they did. They got their mulligan with Northern Illinois. And I think as a, you know, in general, you can live with one mulligan. I think it's really hard to ask for two, which is what Miami's asking for. And I'll get to that in a minute. They have played four top 25 teams in the AP top 25. They've beaten two of them and they lost to the other two very early in the season by less than 5 points when you add it all up. And then during their 10 game winning streak, they've won every game by double digits. The closest game was 10 points with USC, which is one of the ranked teams. The other thing is when you look at their metrics, they profile like a team that not only belongs in the playoff, but that could win playoff games in the rush offense, rush defense, total defense, pass efficiency, and turnover margin. They are elite. They are in the top 25 in all five of those categories. And that's what teams that compete for championships look like. Now, you look at Ohio State's, they're not up there in rushing offense, but they are in single digits in every one of those other categories. Indiana's really good in all those. Texas Tech is really good in all those. Oklahoma, Alabama, they are not. They fail some of those tests. So that's Notre Dame's selling points to me. You want me to make my Notre Dame-Miami point here, Tyler, or just?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I had this in the behind the ballot. I did some research on this. And not because I was trying to convince people not to vote for Miami, but just to understand that head-to-head is important, but it's not zit cream for the rest of your resume. And Miami has two losses to unranked teams. Tyler, if you take teams 1 through 13 and take Miami out of it, how many losses do those teams combined have to unranked teams? So you're talking 12 teams.
Three?
Two.
Two. All right.
Texas Tech lost Arizona State when they didn't have their starting quarterback. Yeah. And Alabama lost to Florida State when they lost their minds. And that's it. Everybody else, if they have a loss, it's to ranked teams. Miami has two unranked losses. And they didn't make their conference championship game, despite some really strange pleading for them to do so. And to me, that has to be considered every bit as much, if not more, than the head-to-head. That's part of your resume.
Yeah. Regardless of the,
and I like Miami. I think they're a good team.
Yeah. I think, there's a very real chance that Miami gets in the playoff too. Like that still is possible, and it doesn't have to come at Notre Dame's detriment either. It's understandable why Miami has tried to attack Notre Dame specifically, given the head-to-head result. And there's plenty of instances in the past where it felt like that would be the trump card, but that doesn't necessarily feel like it's the case this year.
And not all head-to-heads are created equal either.
Right.
Right.
Wanted to get into we got a question here that's rankings related. I'm curious, decided schematic advantage says, I'm curious to your opinion if Navy should be ranked above Tulane based on their quality wins.
I have Tulane a little bit ahead of Miami. I'll have to look at my ballot. But I have both of them ranked this week and maybe within one or two of each other. I have four AAC teams ranked. I have North Texas, not in order, Tulane, North Texas, Navy, and South Florida. And I'll tell you why I put South Florida in with three losses when I get done with this. But But Navy, Navy has a really good win over Memphis, but they lost to Texas Tech, North Texas. And it wasn't a competitive game. North Texas beat them decisively. That's why Navy isn't in their conference championship game. They were tri-champions, but they did not make it. Tulane, to me, you know, playing Ole Miss, beating Duke, beating Northwestern, that's a better resume. And then they played similar teams within their conference. They didn't play each other. And that's why I have Tulane ahead of Navy. But I have Navy ranked too. If Tyler starts talking, I'll look and see what I had him ranked.
Yeah, I'll start talking by answering this question from Chris W. How did you feel about our passing game against Stanford? I thought it was decent. It wasn't the best. I think CJ Carr had a little bit of a slow start. I thought particularly the way he led Notre Dame at the end of the second quarter and to start the third quarter was a good sign for Notre Dame. I don't care what happened when the backup receivers were playing when CJ Carr was still in. Like that doesn't matter to me. But I think overall the passing game can be an asset for Notre Dame. I think there have been some moments in the past couple of games where CJ Carr hasn't looked his best, but I think he's bounced back pretty well and done what Notre Dame needs him to do in the passing game. So it certainly wasn't a pass heavy game for Notre Dame against Stanford, but I thought it was certainly adequate.
So where I have the AAC teams, I have Tulane 18th, and I have them ahead of Michigan. And Michigan just barely beat Northwestern. And that's not the only reason, but that's one data point they have in common. I have North Texas at 20, Navy at 21, and South Florida at 25. And the reason I give South Florida a lot of credit is they went out and played people. They went out and played Miami. They went out and played Boise State, and they went out and played Florida, and they beat Florida, a team that beat Texas. They beat them. So South Florida, it's not because it's Mike Singer's alma mater, although I think he's pretty happy that I'm voting for.
Yeah, but South Florida and Tulane are losing their coaches. Those are the hot programs to take coaches from in the SEC. Did you want to chime in on your thoughts on the Notre Dame's passing game against Stanford?
Yeah, I mean, given that was kind of Stanford's weak suit, it wasn't as smooth as you would like to have seen it, and yet there were some really good plays there. The one thing is, and I mentioned this in a previous column, when Notre Dame does get in the playoff, if it gets in the playoff, and I'm assuming that they are, they're going to have to step it up because they have seen an inordinate amount of bad pass defenses this year. They've seen a couple of good ones, but most of them have been in the lower third or lower fourth of the pass efficiency defense rankings. Now, they see a really good one in practice every day if they go ones versus ones, but that's going to be an adjustment, and they'll have to step up the passing game. But I think they have the players to do it. And if they're getting Billy Shrouth back, that's huge. If they get Shrouth and Jagaza back, that's going to help their passing game with, not that the pass protection has been bad, but it's just going to make them just a better team with a better offensive line.
Yeah, and you mentioned the injury guys. I wanted to get into that now. T. Dawson submitted a question before the show. I have the full list of guys who were on the injured list for Notre Dame last year that I thought we could just go through one by one in terms of who we think will be available for Notre Dame for our first-round playoff game. First one is kicker Noah Burnett.
Yeah, he was warming up before the Stanford game, so I think he's good to go.
All right. How about tight end Cooper Flanagan?
Boy, I'll tell you, that's been a weird one because he's been available, and I don't think he was even in uniform on Saturday night, which is odd given that he's from Northern California and so forth. But I know that they're holding out hope that he'll play, and so I would say – I'd still say that's better than a coin flip that he would.
Yeah, I put him down as a maybe. I'm not really sure about that with the way things have gone. You'd like to think that he should be fine by then, but being available and then unavailable as of late isn't a great sign for Notre Dame. Safety Chay Johnson.
I asked Marcus about it, and he definitely says Tay Johnson would be back for a playoff game. So put that in the definite column for me.
Defensive tackle Gabriel Rubio.
There was very good optimism that he would be back from his elbow injury.
Offensive lineman Billy Shrouth.
There was really good information. I think he might have been able to come back earlier, but they're going to get a fully healthy version of him. As long as there's not a setback, Billy Shrouth is playing.
Offensive lineman Charles Jagusa.
I don't know if he'll be back for the first playoff game. I think he would be back at some point. I mean, it doesn't help to redshirt him that this year he's already redshirted before. You know, last year he came back in January. I'm going to say a little bit better than a coin flip, but I'm not super confident in that.
Yeah, I put him down as a probably not. There haven't been any positive indications that we've heard as of late. Now maybe we're just not hearing the right information, but he's the one I'm skeptical of. The other two on the injured list aren't regular contributors, so I don't know that we necessarily have an answer for them. I haven't asked, I'm not sure if you have, but defensive lineman Sean Cevolano Jr. and offensive lineman Peter Jones.
Right, and I'd also like to mention Great House. He's not on this list.
Yeah, I forgot to include him.
But he has been cleared, and they were able to redshirt him, so now he can play, and I think he would be somebody that can help you in the red zone.
Yeah, he was already declared healthy by Notre Dame by him being listed as available for the games, even though he was not playing. Of the ones we think who could be available, who do you think are the most important for Notre Dame?
This is probably going to surprise you, what I say here, Tyler, maybe it won't. Tay Johnson, I think, is number one. I think he is an absolute difference maker in that secondary. And I think one of the reasons why Notre Dame's defense turned around is when he became a starter. And again, sometimes you're going about, well, who's the backup and stuff. You know, I have Shrouth as number two. I think Sullivan Apsher's done a really good job. I think Shrouth is Notre Dame's best lineman that has played this year. Then I would put Rubio. You always need interior defensive linemen against these elite offensive lines. I have Jag as a fourth just because, I mean, if you guarantee me you'd get last year's playoff version of him, I'd have him higher on the list. I just don't know about having practiced so little in a year. I probably have Noah Burnett on here too low, but we're not still sure if he's going to have some mental hiccups coming back. And then Cooper Flanagan would be on that list too, because I think he gives you another gear if you can match him with the other Flanagan, James, and Eli Reardon. It gives you some three tight end looks on the goal line and short yardage that I think would be productive. What was your order? I'm really curious.
I had Tay Johnson number one as well. I had Noah Burnett at number two. I
could see you making a case for that. Yes.
I know you've tried to put your faith in Eric Schmidt, and he hasn't had enough opportunities to pay that off for you. But I'd like to have a kicker that's made a field goal in a college football game going into a playoff game. Like, that's just maybe that's unfair to describe Eric Schmidt as that. But I mean, that's the reality of the situation. If Noah Burnett isn't available, there seemed to be positive progress with Burnett going through warmups against Stanford. So I think he's getting back to where they want him to be injury wise. So that would be a big return from my perspective. Obviously he's had his struggles this season too. I had Billy Shrouth third, then Gabriel Rubio fourth, and Cooper Flanagan fifth. I didn't include Charles Jagusa. I probably would put him fifth. That probably is underrating him, but just the uncertainty of what he looks like after not playing all season. Although,
and what the continuity would be like too.
Yeah, that's what happened last year, and he did fine with that. We're at an hour already, but I wanted to get some quick thoughts in here. When I mentioned the coaching carousel, is there anything that you think has been most noteworthy about it? What is there any hiring so far that you think are the most noteworthy or maybe head scratching?
I haven't put a lot of energy and attention to it just because of my sleep schedule and everything we had to do last week. It was, and trying to have Thanksgiving with the family and stuff. But the Lane Kiffin thing was interesting to me. Pete Byrne and I from WSBT were talking a little bit about his financial package and incentive packages and so forth, which is crazy. I don't know that that's going to end up being the best move for Lane. I think he found a home at Ole Miss, and I'm not sure if he'll regret that or not down the road. We'll see. That's the one that I really have thoughts on, and I think, I don't know. I just think it's kind of crummy. You got a team in the playoff, you leave to go to LSU, but I guess he feels like it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and he wants to take it, so... How about you? You probably have way more thoughts than I do. Cause
yeah, I mean, there's lots of, I mean, not a lot of deep thoughts. I think.
It felt like they run out of big names pretty quick.
Yeah. I feel like guessing who's going to be a successful head coach is one of the hardest things that we do in this industry. Like Pat Fitzgerald at Michigan State, that's interesting to me. Can he replicate some success there? I was surprised that Jim Mora left UConn to go to Colorado State. Like, I would not have considered. I know UConn's in a very bad position with its independence and football program, but Colorado State doesn't feel like a place to escape to, for my opinion. But that was just surprising to me. I thought it's interesting that Ole Miss has gone ahead and promoted defensive coordinator Pete Golding to head coach, and they're almost trying to replicate the Marcus Freeman situation at Notre Dame. Stanford named Tavita Pritchard its head coach to replace interim Frank Reich. He was the quarterbacks coach of the Washington Commanders. Wanted to give a shout out to fellow DePaul graduate Jamarcus Shepard, Alabama's receivers coach, who's taking the Oregon State job. James Franklin might be the one who I think maybe has the most success at Virginia Tech. That seems like a pretty good match. While we were live, Will Stein, there's been news that he's going to be hired as Kentucky's head coach, according to On3's Pete Nakos and Chris Lowe. I think that's a good get for Kentucky.
Ben Stein would have been interesting.
Will Stein is Oregon's offensive coordinator, who's had a lot of success in the college rankings. Ben Stein
was the guy that said Bueller.
Yeah, no, I know Bueller. Who Ben Stein is. Maybe the audience didn't, but I knew who it was. I'm not nasally enough as I was last week to do a good Ben Stein impersonation. Penn State's seemingly their top target, according to the report earlier from On3's. I think it was a group of them. Pete Nakos, Chris Lowe, and Brett McMurphy, a few of our national reporters, said that Kalani Sitake, the head coach at BYU, is Penn State's top target right now. So that'll be interesting if that's
I love him, but I don't think that's a match. I think he's at a place where he can win and win big. I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what if that ends up being their hiring there. I understand the angst of wanting to get James Franklin out of there, but it was like, well, okay, who are you going to get that's better than James Franklin? And we'll see if that's the right answer. Normally we would just skip recruiting stuff, but Eric, I'll rapid fire through some thoughts here because it is the week of early signing period. I'll share some thoughts going into that this week, which starts Wednesday for those who aren't adapted to the new calendar
and that haven't realized that I've changed the name of signing day to recruiting day.
Recruiting day, Recruitapalooza day.
Okay. Is there anything to monitor in the 2026 class going into Wednesday?
Not necessarily. Notre Dame has seemingly stopped pushing for safety Matt Sigg, who's a Penn State commit. Notre Dame was pushing for him. He wasn't necessarily ready to flip his commitment late last month. I think it's coming down to Penn State, Virginia Tech, and Indiana there. Steve Wolfong reported that he suggested that he thinks he'll follow James Franklin of Virginia Tech. So that'll be interesting to see if that's what happens there. And I imagine James Franklin's, that wouldn't be the first or last guy that will happen with James Franklin. Other than that, Mike Singer earlier today, our Blue and Gold teammate, had a note about an unlikely addition to Notre Dame's class this evening over at blueandgold.com. So I won't give that away, but folks can check that out if they want. And I thought it's interesting. Typically, like the ends of the cycles like this that are, I guess, more or less boring for Notre Dame typically means that Notre Dame's class isn't that interesting, but that's not the case this year. Notre Dame's class is elite, and we'll have plenty to discuss later this week about the guys they signed.
Okay. How good is Notre Dame's 2026 class?
Yeah, Notre Dame's class is currently ranked number 3 in the Rivals industry team rankings. That's currently using 18 commitments in the class score. Notre Dame could go up depending on how the final player rankings shake out going into to February. I think maybe the last rankings come out in January. Rivals currently has 2 Notre Dame commits rated as 5-star recruits, offensive tackle Grayson McHugh and defensive end Rodney Dunham. And then there are 3 others who are 5-star recruits according to the industry rankings. That's cornerback Kari Adams, tight end Ian Premmer, and safety Joey O'Brien. Premmer and O'Brien are 5-star recruits according to 24/7 Sports. Rivals has as Premmer at number 27 overall, O'Brien at number 25 overall. So that means they're in line to be 5-stars once the 5-stars go up to the 32 number. So as long as they can stay in that overall ranking spot, Notre Dame will be adding some more Rivals 5-stars to its class. There's not – Notre Dame doesn't get classes with that many 5-stars in it during the internet era. We're in uncharted territory. Notre Dame had 4 Rivals 5-star recruits in the 2013 class, but that included Eddie Vanderdoes. He didn't end up coming to Notre Dame. The 2008 class is also fourth, was also fourth in the industry rankings, which that 2013 class was 2, and that had 3 5-star recruits according to Rivals: Dane Crist, Michael Floyd, and Kyle Rudolph. So this is a very star-studded class for Notre Dame.
Who are your favorite recruits in this class?
Yeah, there's a lot to like there. Obviously, those guys that are in the 5-star conversation are worthy of being liked. Joey O'Brien is someone who's a fascinating player, has just such a long safety and has plenty of plays she's made at the wide receiver position in high school. Ebenezer Iwatade, the defensive end out of North Carolina, I really like. Javion Osborne, the running back out of Texas. Those are guys that stand out a lot to me, in addition to the guys that I already mentioned in terms of being 5-stars. But this is an exciting class for Notre Dame, and really shows what Notre Dame is capable of on the recruiting trail under Marcus Freeman.
Kevin Garber, very cool to your question. Okay, and the last question for Tyler is Notre Dame building momentum for the 2027 class?
Yeah, I think I had this question on here last week for you to ask me if we got to recruiting, and that happened with Notre Dame getting Amari Irvin out of IMG Academy, a linebacker. Rivals rates him as a 3-star recruit, the number 38 linebacker. I like him more than that. I would say he's a bit undersized at 5'11" and 215 pounds. But that is just the start of things that Notre Dame's working on in the 2027 class, potentially this month even. 4-star cornerback Ace Alston is announcing his decision on December 9th. Notre Dame is among the favorites there. He's ranked as the number 12 cornerback and number 163 overall by Rivals. And 4-star safety Marquise Bryant is announcing his decision on December 16th. Notre Dame is among the favorites there. He's Rivals' number 21 safety and number 222 overall. So plenty to look forward to in terms of 2027 decisions, even though the 2026 decisions have already been made. And it looks like Notre Dame's going to be able to hold on to all of its commitments and not have any sort of late decommitments, unless I'm being a mush here and jinxing someone.
Okay, before Tyler signs us off, Tom Lemming and I are going to do a live show Thursday at noon Eastern time to wrap up recruiting, see if we can handle the technology without Tyler helping us. Really appreciate the huge crowd we have. This may have been the largest live crowd we've ever had. I don't know if y'all thought I was going to eat another turkey leg. I ate one on Sunday's roundtable show. So if you want to go to the Blue Gold channel, look for that. There's one in the refrigerator still, but I'm going to let the grandkids fight over that one.
We'll make sure we get video of that. I want video of the grandkids fighting for the turkey leg.
Whoever cleans the house the most.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to that Thursday show, even though I can't be with you guys. I'm sure you guys will have a good time. We'll put some good technology juju out there for you and make sure we get you set up for that, and I'm sure that'll be a good show. All right, everyone, thanks for watching us. Reminder, you have a few hours left to take advantage of the Cyber Monday sale at blueandgold.com. New subscribers can sign up for 50% off an annual subscription at blueandgold.com. Just follow the link in the video description below, or just head over to blueandgold.com and hit the join button, and that deal should be available for you as long as it is still Cyber Monday. So apologies if you haven't taken advantage of that yet and missed the opportunity. We've been tweeting about the Black Friday sale since Friday. So there's been a number of days where you can have taken advantage of this. And hopefully if you haven't, you still have some time to do so. Make sure you like this video, subscribe to the channel here as well. And you'll see Eric and Tom on Thursday, and you'll see us again next week. All right, everyone, have a good week.